Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 156. We're back to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 2, episodes 21 and 22, the two-part finale, Becoming. Oh my gosh, I imagine that a lot of our listeners are very excited because for a lot of people, this is in fact one of their all-time favorite episodes of Buffy, and it will be very exciting to see what the newbies think about this one. My name is Selena, and I am one of your two super fans this week. The other is Natalie, and for the newbies, we have got Brittany and Mitch. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Good morning, afternoon.
Good morning, afternoon, and night.
Yes.
the beauty of an international podcast. Before we get started with our discussion of Becoming parts 1 and 2, which we're going to do as like a joint discussion this week, we just want to remind you of the contact information so you can get in touch with us about this episode of the podcast, about Buffy, or your spoiler-free thoughts on future episodes. You can email us rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as always, we're going to open with fun facts so you can distinguish our voices. We'll start with the hardest voice of all, Mitch's. We're all confused about who you are.
Well, the first fun fact is that I am a real-life, breathing Lorelai Gilmore because I'm currently eating a Pop-Tart, just like she would be if she had to wake up really early, too. And, I mean, I don't drink coffee, but if I did, I would. But my actual fun fact is that I went to the EMP Museum in Seattle, which is like a pop culture museum, and I saw Mr. Pointy and other things that I don't remember because they weren't important to me at the time, but like the actual props. They had like a whole entire basement to this museum that was all horror pop culture stuff and like how horror was developed, and of course Buffy's a big part of that. So they had like this little section, and I'll try and find the pictures. Maybe you can find them again. I don't know. It was a while back. It was like you know, maybe 9 months ago, and I don't think I really cared at the time because I was like, eh, whatever. I'm not gonna watch that show. So yeah, it was. Like something, it was silly because I was like, Mr. Pony, what does that matter to like anyone? But apparently, I just needed to watch the show to understand, to have those feels.
Did you get spoiled by any of the props?
No, I don't remember really any because there was a book that I still don't know what it was. I think it was like some kind of monster book.
Maybe it's probably
the vampire book with the Y vampire. Mm-hmm. I think, right? Isn't that a prop?
I have another inkling of what book it might have been, but it's way not related to what we're doing right now, so we'll see.
Well, that's exciting. Brittany, do you want to give yours?
Sure. I have a Gilmore Girls fun fact, too, which is good because I didn't have a fun fact, but now Mitch inspired me. I am drinking coffee, and Lorelai Gilmore would never get up early to do a podcast, I think. No. But yesterday, I felt like it was like 2005 again when Michael Osiello was still working for TV Guide, and he wrote a cover story on Gilmore Girls, and they had different collector covers, so like every cover featured a different couple. And mm-hmm. I drove around to like all these drugstores looking to get all the covers, and I still have them somewhere in a box. But yesterday, I drove to 5 different stores looking for the Entertainment Weekly cover, and I still could not find it. It was, like, not anywhere. I went to food stores and drug stores and Barnes & Nobles, and I could not find this Entertainment Weekly cover. So I was, like, disappointing my 15-year-old self for failing at driving around to all these places to find a Gilmore Girls cover story. So that I can.
Well, that's weird that Barnes & Noble wouldn't have it.
I think they were sold out. There was like, it was empty in the Entertainment Weekly spot.
Holy crap.
I know. Like, print media picking up for Gilmore Girls.
And I guess I'll say my fun fact here about, because it relates to that, is that as you guys know, I'm watching Gilmore Girls right now because we're doing a special series on Hype. And I can't watch further because I'm only on season 2. And, like, all this revival news is just torture for me because I keep getting spoiled on things. Like, I'm so glad a Buffy revival isn't happening in general, but also just right now, because it would be even more impossible for you guys than it is right now to remain spoiler-free on what's happening, because I'm just getting spoiled on everything, and it's pissing me off, because when I watch a show for the first time, I don't actually want to know what comes ahead. So very, very annoying, and trying very hard to ignore all things Gilmore Girls.
Especially because it's like every week, it's like, here are 9,000 characters that are coming back, and you're like, but I've only met 1,500 characters. I don't know who these other are.
I got spoiled on the hugest thing the other day, because they were like, this person is coming back to play this person's spoiler, and I was like, oh, I didn't know they had one of those.
There were a lot of spoilers they released kind of just like easy. They were like, this is Rory's job, period.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, like that, I feel like you should have waited until like the premiere episode to wait to like reveal that. But no, apparently that's just,
people think it's okay to post spoilers for stuff that happened 10 years ago. I don't know what's wrong with the world.
But it's weird because it's like it happened 10 years ago, but it didn't, because it's like happening again. It's a really weird situation.
It is. It really is. Anyway, that's mine. What is your fun fact this week, Natalie?
I don't know. I've never seen a Gilmore Girl, so I'm not familiar. What are these girls of which you speak, and what makes them Gilmore? No, I know the basic premise. I know the basic premise of Gilmore Girls. I don't know. I don't have a Gilmore related fact to share. I am going to be in, well, I'm going to be in New York in a week, which many, many people already know. But after that, I'm going to be in London, and I just booked a hotel in London today that used to be an old hospital, and it was the birthplace of Alan Turing. So that's interesting. It looks really cool, and I guess if you're a real stalker, you could probably find me if you try and look up where Alan Turing was born. You don't have to do that, though, so... Yeah,
that'd be fun. Quite the commitment, because you didn't exactly see the dates you're going, so then people would have to like buy a month past the hotel. You
freak
know?
Me out, Mitch. I'm really sure that no one's that dedicated to stalking me. Probably if I was One Direction or something, but
yes,
not
oh
me.
Yeah.
You know, rewatchable fans, they go as hard as Directioners, I'm sure. But
I'm sure they do. Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know, it's a dedicated bunch, but No, I think you're fine. That's very exciting. Are you coming over? Is that for the play, or is it for a different reason?
The play. It's not for the play. It's too early for that. I will probably be coming back at Christmas for the play, because I get a break over Christmas that's quite long because of the university. I work at the university, and they're closed at the Christmas break. But no, this is just after I spend a few days in New York, just a very quick trip through to see friends and stuff. I will be there for the Civil War, midnight. I'll be seeing Civil War on release day in London, not at home. Like, I'll still be in London when that comes out.
Fandom Apocalypse, she'll be there.
Do they have, anything special going on?
Yeah. They have a red carpet premiere. I don't know who's going. It's actually not at Leicester Square, which is where the premieres are usually being held. It's at Westfield London, which is a mall in Shepherd's Bush, and it's the Ultron one was there as well. I guess they have a deal with them, but I think it's quite disappointing not to have the Leicester Square one where it's all open and iconic and stuff. But oh well.
Anyway, it's like we almost don't want to talk about Buffy. We keep talking about other things, but,
no.
But this is all very exciting stuff. This is very cool. But I do want to get into talking about Buffy becoming, because I have a feeling that we're going to get into it with some of these things that happened, and I want to make sure we have time for all of it. So let's start by reading the synopsis of the two-part episode written by Ariana, who has made this doc of discussion point for us as well. So in these episodes, we finally find out Angel's backstory, and apparently before he was a vampire, he was one of those animatronics chasing chickens on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. Meanwhile, back at the farm, Buffy and Willow find Jenny's floppy and discover a spell that could bring Angel back his soul. Xander makes a valid argument against the matter, but still insists on being an asshole while presenting said valid argument. Also, Kendra shows up for a hot second before dying to propel a white girl's agency. Where is the lie? True takes Giles back to the lair to make out with him, and Spike is not down with this plot twist, so he decides he wants an anti-hero team-up with Buffy. Along the way, Joyce finally finds out Buffy's secret, and in the process reveals that she is worse at processing human emotions than the soulless blonde demon who is hanging out on her stoop. That is harsh. So Buffy goes to fight Angel. Spike drives off with Drew. Willow comes out of her coma to turn into an exorcist, but it's a shot through the heart, and she's too late because Buffy has to stab her true love to stop the impending apocalypse. In the end, Buffy skips town, and Cordelia really rocks that yellow dress. Again, where's the lie?
I noticed very the good. Dress really strongly in this episode. Mm-hmm. I was like, that outfit is really popping. Clearly the most important aspect of becoming part one and part two.
That's what we want to be lingering on, not the major character deaths or the huge reveals or anything, no. But so clearly... we have so many. First of all, newbies, how are you guys? How are you feeling? How are you doing? How did you find this this finale?
It was no. I should have seen it.
In what way?
I can't stop saying that. I should have seen it. How did I not? He gets his own spinoff, Mitchell. Did you think he was a regular on the show forever? Oh my God! How stupid can I be?
Oh, you didn't see the death coming?
If we can predict, like, Monster of the Week episodes, how come I can't predict, like, very simple plot points? The fact that Angel's going to die. I remember you... Okay, so Natalie, you were laughing when I was like, is it going to come to a point where, for dramatic tension, they're going to have one of Buffy characters, a main character, kill off their lover, because that's one of the most dramatic ways to do it. And then you and Cam were like, I'm internally screaming, I can't. And I was like, what? What? And now I'm like, duh. Because, like...
Right. I don't know.
Because I figured he just comes back as like as Angel, not Angelus, and he's going to get his soul back, and he's a staple part of the show, and that's why there's such a big ship, and that's it. And, oh boy, was I wrong.
I'm so glad the show can still surprise you. Like, even though this, again, this is one of those things that has been replicated on literally all of the TV shows ever since, is what we were talking about with Once Upon a Time as well, Brittany.
Yeah.
But still, it can surprise you. That's really nice. I like that. Well done, show.
Yeah, I mean, even though I finally now see why it's like Once Upon a Time was much more, not traumatic, but like, I guess I felt it more. And then this episode, I think because it was built up so much outside of watching it, like, oh, becoming, just not even from you guys, but also from like, just the Twitter interactions, people love this episode. So I felt like the stakes were really high going into it for me. And then I think it was because I've seen this play out on other shows, especially so recently. Yeah. It was just sort of like, eh, there it is. And I felt so disappointed that Angel was back. I was like, oh no, how can you switch from such good acting to such bad acting so quickly? How can you do that?
It's his superpower. No, I think, to be honest, though, that's one of the things we're talking about with Buffy, where it really is at a disadvantage and rewatching or watching it for the first time now, because so many shows have replicated it, and but with a newer, like, it's kind of, this is not a horrible comparison, but it's kind of like if you watch The Force Awakens and then you go back and watch A New Hope and you're like, yeah, this is okay, but like Force Awakens did the same thing, but it looks better, you know?
Yeah, like, it's, yeah, you know,
it's always gonna come out unfairly Buffy, whereas at the time this had not happened before. But yeah, so glad to get your sort of initial reactions. We'll get back to it, discuss it later on in the discussion. But the first thing that we should really get into is the flashbacks. This is the first time, I think, that Buffy has done flashbacks like this. You know, this was not only Angel's origin story, but also Buffy's origin story, because we all obviously saw her being called to be a slayer. And so the first backstory flashback that we pick up on is the one that Ariana is sure is set at the Disneyland's Pirates of the Caribbean boat ride, because the set is so bad. and we see like how bad of a human Angel was, like how little of him there really was. And we've gotten into this before, talking about why the demon was able to take him over so completely, is because his human self was such a fail. You know?
Yeah, so blah. Like,
I want to know who his friend was. Do we explore that in Angel? I don't know if that's really a spoiler.
No.
Like, is he important?
What do you?
No. The one that fell over? No, it's just a
his,
bar
like, drunk
buddy
friend that he was there with. Because he was Angel, I couldn't tell because they were kind of in the dark and like at a distance. But I was trying to decide how disgusting Angel was as a human, because he said something about keeping the ladies warm, or maybe that was his drunken friend. I don't know.
Well,
regardless, the company you keep. So whatever it was, yeah. I think it was just meant to be really disgusting.
Yeah, Basically, that's what that set up. And we see him obviously get turned by Darla. Darla comes back in a flashback. I really like that they did that. You know, it's one of those early, like, just commitments of bringing back the same actress and having her be so compelling, even though she has such a small role and stuff. Did you guys like seeing Darla again? Did you even recognize her?
Yeah, I forgot all about her.
Yeah, well, I was totally into it.
Well, I looked up the IMDb, and I was like, I'm pretty sure we've seen this person before, and I've really just forgotten about it. So I did actively go and like be like, this is going to be something they're going to talk about, and I'm not going to know it, and I should look it up.
I have to admit, though, Brittany, I missed a perfect live-tweeting moment, because I'm pretty sure you'd already watched the episode, so I probably could have tagged your watchable. Just a funny Nemo when all the fish go, Darla!
Do you guys... feel like you have the mythology now of how you become a vampire? Because they haven't shown too many people actually becoming vampires. It's just like, right. Oh, Teresa's a vampire now, whatever. But yeah, it's, you know, they obviously show Angel, you know, Darla has chosen not just to feed on him, but to make him a vampire for whatever reason, thought he was hot probably. And so he has to drink her blood after she drinks his. Basically, he has to get bitten, and then you have to consume some already vampiric blood.
Yeah, this made me very angry. Not at Buffy, at Ryan Murphy. Because for all of American Horror Story Hotel, he's like, they're not vampires, they're not vampires. I'm not basing this off of vampire lore. These people who suck blood are not vampires. This is exactly how he turns people in American Horror Story into these immortal, blood-sucking non-vampires, is that they slit their throats with a fingernail, like Drew does, and then they have to drink the blood, and it's usually right where Darla made Angel drink the blood from. And I'm like, I cannot. Wow. This is ridiculous.
Haven't you learned not to trust a single word out of Ryan Murphy's mouth by
because now? Because American Crime Story was just so good. And now
it's okay. He's really good at pilot season.
I've never even heard of this.
Oh, it's the O.J. Simpson thing.
How many shows has he made?
It's the O.J. Simpson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't even know who O.J.
vampires and O.J. Simpson.
No. Two different shows.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
This connection
got very confused there for a second. Like, I may not be American, but I'm pretty sure that's not what happened.
Pretty sure that was not televised.
Brand confusion. I get it, because it's both American something.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should start making a tally of people that rip off Buffy at this point, because it's just stupid. But so anyway, like, moving on a little bit to Drew, because we also got to see not how she became a vampire, but we got to see her as a human, and we got to see how Angelus took an interest in her and why he was so intent on turning her and bringing out this apparent like link to the supernatural that she had already when she was alive. What did you guys think about that? Yeah,
Selena, I brought this up with Caitlin last week, or maybe it was with Karen a few weeks ago, in talking about Drew's visions, because you see Drew's visions, you know, that she had them before she died. It wasn't just a vampire magic power. She was, you know, had these, whatever they were, problems when she was alive. And I just wanted to ask you, I can't go into it at length at all, because it's, you know, it's so far in advance that even saying the word won't spoil the newbies more than, it'll spoil them more than they know. But are you aware of the theory about Drew? And
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's a couple of different ones about Drew and her visions. I'm sort of inclined to think that she... You know, like, we've seen in this world, there are people that have, like, links to the supernatural and that are, like, more open to the forces of occult and stuff. And I have a feeling that's what they were going for. But I'm sort of aware of the different theories, and I like them. I like all of the stuff.
The one particular one I was talking to Caitlin about, I really like, which is... it would make it really interesting, but they never really follow up on any of that vision or why. So yeah,
maybe in the comics.
Not that I'm aware of, but the comics are stupid, so I've stopped reading.
Or some of that extended universe bookage. I know there's a lot of books out there too.
There's a great book about Spike and Drew.
That's meant to be one of the better ones. There's a lot of books, a lot of novels of like their various you know, exploits of all of the characters and stuff, and they're not exactly canon, but they're there.
Mostly Rascally Monster of the Week Scooby episodes?
Yes.
Not really. Well, yeah, there's a lot of that too, but there's like a lot of sort of exploration of slayers and of, yeah, backstories, and there's like, there's one really good one that's like the Book of Force, where you hear like, you meet like the slayer who was the slayer before Buffy, who, like, you know, spoiler alert, that we never meet her like in the show, but we meet her in this book, and oh, it's so good. Anyway, that's not what this podcast is about. A lot of geeky stuff. The Buffy extended universe is definitely worth exploring if you like this stuff. So I guess I'm moving on a little bit, unless you guys want to say anything else about Drew.
I just wanted to say
this. I don't like her anymore. What?
Oh, I was going to say I love her in the flashbacks. Like, mm-hmm. I only want to see that Drew ever again. Like,
aww.
I was so excited when...
Aww, like, oh, God.
She just annoys me. She's so annoying. And
yeah.
I was hoping... I still held out some hope that she would be better once she had her, like, you know, rebirth. But it just didn't happen, unfortunately.
She's very annoying, and I don't know why any of the vampire boys like her. I will say I found her, the way that she sort of came in, I thought I found the scene where she killed Kendra
mm-hmm.
very effective, in that she came in, like, you know, all of the guys attacked, all of the vampire minions attacked, and then she comes in all very sort of innocent and precious and light, and she just has sort of that fight, like, you know, Kendra's not a match for her, she can just stop every move, and her whole thrall thing. I found her killing of Kendra quite cool as far as the killing of good guys goes. Mm-hmm. But just her general behavior, and I don't know why they like her, and I just don't understand.
No, I see what they were trying to do.
I would be so annoyed. Yeah. I would just be like, you need to be quiet now.
I think I see why Spike likes her. Like, I think that makes sense to me, because he's like, you know, so consumed by love and obsession and passion and all those things. So I think I see the draw for such an intense person as Drusilla. You know, he like imprints on her and then that's it, you know. But for Angel, I don't know. I think they, yeah, anyway, the actress is lovely, I will say. So, but anyway, so moving on a little bit in the timeline, Angel gets his soul back. We see that moment with the gypsies and how, like, they curse him, and he regains, like, he becomes a human again, or he gets his soul back, and suddenly this drunken, messed up, just aimless person with a terrible Irish accent suddenly has all these memories of doing these horrible things.
Brittany, and, is he Rue from Gilmore Girls? I didn't look it up. Yes. I should have. Okay, thank you.
Who?
Whistler.
Jackson's cousin
that I
hooked Lorelai up with.
Oh, is that the same guy?
Yeah, I tried to. Yes, I looked it up really quickly while we were talking about Drew, because I was like, I know Mitch is going to say something, and I want to make sure that he appears before season 3.
All right, right. He did. Mm. He did. I think I actually thought he was hilarious, but but very annoying. He's just, and we find out too. I mean, a very abbreviated version of Angel's life story. He basically got his soul back, and he didn't go out and become this like fighter of the forces of darkness. He like got just completely just running around eating rats, and obviously there's a lot of time
for
missing.
For 90 years,
yeah, like, for 90 just, like, years,
he couldn't have worked out the butcher trick before, like before some guy came along and told him.
It just shows, like, again, it comes back to Angel's human self. Like, there isn't a lot
it's
there.
Nothing.
It's not until
it's
someone
nothing.
Gives him right. It's not yeah, until
he's
someone like
so
hands
blank.
Him a mission on a platter that he's like, oh, I have a purpose now. Oh, this girl, she's beautiful, you know, whatever.
But he still
but yeah,
can't
no,
even
really,
handle
they're...
that. He's like,
exactly.
Death may or may not be coming. I gotta go.
Exactly.
Explains it so perfectly in that first season, like, where he comes in and tries to be all like, I know what's going on. He's actually like,
yeah.
Oh my God. And inside his head, he's like, I'm freaking out. This isn't going mm-hmm. how I wanted to. I need
a rat.
You know?
Yeah.
Well,
you're right.
Like,
you're right.
Back. And so that's, yeah, that's really exemplary of, like, you know, the inside of his head, I think, in that whole, oh, I know everything, I'm here to help. It's because he's so awkward. He's lived in the bin for, like, 90 years and not talked to anyone. It took some guy in a hat to be like, you know that you can have a personality and be, like, a person, right?
Right.
Which is why I love Whistler so much and Spike, and it's something I've been talking a lot about, is that whole personhood thing of demons. Like, what's the difference between, you know, a vampire, a demon, a person, you know, is, do they have personhood? And I think it's becoming clearer and clearer that they can, but that some of them don't, because their personhood, they're in, like, in them, like their brain, their personality, their heart, you know, dare I say it, their soul is not strong enough to come through, but some people's are, and some people are functioning people well enough.
Exactly. Like, kind of. Exactly. And it's just, and that's one of the things, commitment to Buffy's mythology, that I just respect so much. Because again, like you say, like you keep saying, Angel is such a fail, but that's the point. Like, from the very beginning, they committed to creating this character who had these things going on inside his head, and you believe it. Like, now you've seen this backstory of his, you're like, oh my God, season one, it makes sense. You know, like, he didn't just turn on a dime and he's like, I am the hero, you know? He's actually, he developed from what we saw in these flashbacks to what we saw in the pilot, and it makes sense. And I admire that.
In a short period of time. You know, Whistler goes to take him to see Buffy, you know, the night she was turned or whatever. Like, the night she was called as the Slayer, or, you know, the night she learned that she was the Slayer. Mm-hmm. And then she, you know, has done that for a year or so before she moves to Sunnydale. So it's Angel has been, like, rat boy for, like, 80 years and, like, stealth hero for only 1 year. So
Exactly. Yeah. I think, and knowing they did that on purpose, I think, says a lot about their commitment to character. I enjoy that. But so, yeah, he meets Whistler, this guy who looks human but is a demon, but claims he's a good guy, and it's my quote, so we'll come back to it. And he takes him to see Buffy, and we get to see how Buffy was called. We got to see her when she was Cordelia, as it were, in her old school. And we got to see her watcher, who was not Donald Sutherland, who was her watcher in the Buffy movie. It's kind of like rewriting history here, because this is when it really breaks from the Buffy movie, which was when we saw her originally get called, actually. So I kind of like that sort of little rewriting of history. And
I didn't get that was her watcher. I thought that was just like her, I don't know, you can take the red pill or the blue pill guy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I didn't think he was her watcher either, just because I feel like he was just waiting to pass her off to someone. Like, he was like in the initial, I did not get that he was her watcher. Because just
Well, maybe that's what other watchers are like. Like, I always think of, I don't think Giles is your traditional watcher, you know? I think, like, she really lucked out with him.
So, yeah, so he's
maybe more. Well, he was just, like, so casual, and, like, he was just like, you're the watcher. And she's like, what? He's like, I told you, you're the watcher. And, like, it just didn't feel like, or you got what I was saying. She's a
Slayer. Yeah.
He did not feel like, not even just not like Giles, but like what I would imagine any other watcher to be, because he felt like more like a high school principal, honestly.
Well, yeah,
like a character you'd see in like Family Matters or something. I don't know. He just felt like very auxiliary. He didn't really feel like really important. He was just like, I'm here to deliver the message, but I'm not here to actually do anything but move the plot along.
Well, I will say that I think that's a good observation, and I think you should hold on to that. And I don't think you're wrong, but no comment. I think I'm glad you pointed that out. It's a very good observation. And Angel, you know, decides to become a hero when he sees Buffy in her bathroom crying, a little low-key stalking there, but I guess it's what he does. And that's pretty much, like, that's our backstory of Angel, and just in time for him to die. Very sad. It's very much the Lost model of introducing someone to us before killing them off. But
I'm still not over Nikki and Paolo. Sorry, but I actually said that episode.
That was the worst. I still have nightmares about that. Oh my gosh. So yeah, we moving into the present day time now, because we do have a lot to get through. Ariana has a note here that I think is spot on, which is that the opening cafeteria scene made her realize that the both sets of couples, Willow Oz and Sandra and Cordelia, could also have been cast to play siblings because they look so much alike. And, like, I've noticed the same thing, like a different scene where they're all, like, walking next to each other, and it's, like, it's very weird. I'm not, obviously it wasn't intentional, but it's just a funny observation. And they're all cute and coupley and stuff, and Willow is still...
And you can unsee it, like, once you realize, my God, these people look related, it's really weird. Because they have, like, specific features of each other that, like... Maybe it's just the hair color, I don't know. But, like, there's something about, like, even, like, the tone of their skin and, like, their mm-hmm. face shape that just reminds me of each other. Like, I think Willow and Oz kind of, like, a heart-shaped face, and mm-hmm. Cordelia and Xander probably have, like, a more, like, square rectangle kind of face. And it's just weird. When you get there, you're like, oh, I'm not going to unsee that now, am I?
Yeah, they do kind of fit together, and I almost have to wonder if that was... It's kind of done intentionally, not the looks of them, but, like, it makes Buffy being alone so much more apparent. Like, she sticks out, you know, opposed to these two, like, the redheaded couple and the dark-haired couple, and then you've got the blonde all by herself, you know? And so Willow's still teaching, and she's apparently they have a huge teacher shortage in Sunnydale High because she's pretty much just keeps on going, and a nice little study scene with Buffy and Willow provide... for a scene that still gives me chills watching it so many years later, which is when Buffy drops a pencil and picks it up and doesn't pick up the floppy disk. And you're like, no, but, you know, so close. And then she has what we have to presume is sort of like a Slayer premonition or something like that, where she actually realizes that the floppy disk is there and they find it. Am I crazy? Did you have similar strong feelings about the scene, Natalie?
I actually really like the scene, the kind of the preceding it, when Willow gets all stern with her and is like, you know, you could learn this, you know, but if you don't try, stop wasting my time. So I liked that. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any particular, like, you know, oh my God, like, no, about the floppy disk, like, because I knew what was coming. So
right, okay.
Like, I didn't relive the emotions. But back to Mitch's point very quickly about them looking the same or whoever, you know, you guys were talking about that. Are you newbies aware that Allison Hannigan and Seth Green played boyfriend and girlfriend when they were like 13 years old in a fantastic movie called My Stepmother is an Alien? And so they've known each other since they were little kids.
Just that the name alone of that movie speaks. It's so
nice. It's very 80s, isn't it? It's like, oh yeah. God,
it's in the 80s. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's great. I think so.
That's fabulous. Is it My Stepmom's an Alien? Is that what that was?
Mm-hmm.
So their boyfriend and girlfriend, I'm assuming this isn't like a Clueless thing where they're like brother and sister as well and step-siblings, or?
No, they're real, yeah, no. They're just...
Because okay. Then it's going to take like the whole we look a lot alike thing even to a higher extent, and I wasn't sure how to feel about it.
Another thing, speaking of Willow, that we sort of we get to get a sense of here is that she's been, like she said, she tells Giles when they find the soul spell that she's been like a little bit experimenting with magic, and she's like, I may be the best person to do this, and Giles is like, what the hell, I didn't know any of this was going on, no one tells him anything, and she actually also ends up doing the spell, which I thought was an interesting turn for Willow. Did you guys have any thoughts about that?
I can see her becoming like a full-fledged witch as the show goes on, because it feels really organic to her character. She's really curious in all the same kind of stuff that Giles is, and mm-hmm. I feel like she might also follow somewhat of the same arc where she's like not necessarily trying to get high off a demon, but she's like, wow, this is so cool. Oh my God, what am I doing? Get me out of here. Help, help. And then Buffy has to like save her soul from hell or something.
Yeah, well, I really like about it though is she's getting much more assertive now, like both with the teaching and now with the spell. She's like, I'm gonna do it, and like no one can stop her. And we've sort of seen her get to this point through the season. Like, this really is the culmination of her taking charge, and as a big Willow fan, I very much enjoy that.
Plus I think this is something that Willow like knows that she can do without having like getting bitten or like suffering some like traumatic experience or just being born into this like fate. Like, it's something that she can actively choose to become involved with, and I think she likes the agency of having that like being like, I can choose to do this and be a part of it. And if I found a way, unlike Xander, who just like tries everything and fails.
Exactly. Wow. Poor but Xander. You're right, though. The dichotomy that it's setting up between Willow and Xander is also very interesting. And I think very much intentional that Willow is being like, you know what? I'm like a not like a normal person in the supernatural world. I'm going to find a way to contribute. Whereas Xander is just like, I'm like, he doesn't have anything. And he just, you know, keeps trying to further his own agendas and trying to do the best he can in a very misguided way. And it just, it shows the difference between those two people. And I like seeing them split up like that, because at the beginning of season one, they were really unequal playing fields, you know?
I also really noticed that when she did the spell at the end in the hospital bed and actually succeeded, it was just such a different tone to when she was just, like, trying, if you know what I mean. Like, when they were trying in the hospital and stuff like that, it kind of just felt a bit like, oh, you know, I'm trying this. And you know, when they were doing it in the library, it felt a bit, you know, oh, I'm just going through the motions. You know, I'm just reciting all of this stuff. But, like, when it actually, you know, it came in the hospital and they actually did it, and, you know, I don't know if it was just the way they shot her or what, it just felt like a whole different Willow.
Yeah. It did. It did. That's very true. And meanwhile, of course, as we talked about, Xander isn't interested in saving Angel at all. He just wants to kill him. And I think, you know, we're all sort of very aware of the fact that Xander is a very selfish, short-sighted person. But I will say, I think that he also genuinely wants Buffy to win. You know, like, I think part of his resistance is that, look, Angel's evil now. I don't like him, so I'm glad that he's evil now. Let's just kill him, and let's not give Buffy any ambiguity, because it may very well cause her to hesitate at a moment where she doesn't want to hesitate, you know?
I don't know. I think that thing about him, you know, Willow telling her to tell him that they were trying the spell, and then him actively choosing not to, that is a, oh, I couldn't come back from that if I was Buffy. Like, you know, if I found, you know, if I found out the circumstances behind that and I was her, I could not be having that. Like, that would just be done. Like, why would you do that?
What motivation?
I mean, maybe there is a motivation that's not the grossest thing ever, but like, what motivation could you give for that, do you reckon?
Yeah, I didn't necessarily love that decision on his part, but I did appreciate his initial like rant about like, no, like, we have to kill Angel. And I was down with that. I'm like, all right, someone is saying it, like, in finally, and it's the person who takes Buffy's feelings like into deep consideration most of the time, and it's just, he has to be the one to say it, because everyone's sort of thinking about it like, yeah, life would be so much easier if we could just kill this guy and then it's done and the threat is not there, we don't have to worry about him losing his soul again, like, it's just, it's over with. And I was on that team, even though I want Angelus to live forever as Angelus, but I know that's not possible. So I like, appreciated Xander in that moment, but like Natalie was saying, like, there's a line and he crossed it, and is there a way to come back from that, because with Buffy and him? I'm sure there is, but for right now it feels very, it made the ending make a lot more sense.
I absolutely agree, and it's one of those things I actually think they're doing, as I've said before, like, I think they're doing really well with Xander, is that they're setting up this character that you don't, at this point, when he goes to that thing at the end, when he doesn't tell her, you're like, Xander, like, you're the worst. Like, literally, what, like, how can he be the worst to such an extent that he is? But I think we're very much meant to feel that way. And we're very much sort of meant to struggle with Xander's very questionable morals. But I will say, I agree with you, Brittany, that scene in the library, I appreciated him sharing that perspective, and I appreciated too how him and Giles just completely went at each other, because that's another thing the show is doing really well that I think is kind of being overlooked, is that sort of animosity brewing just under the surface with Xander and Giles. It came out later too, when Xander rescued Giles, and he was like, well, you don't really want to see me, do you? You
know? Yeah.
And Giles sort of being the point, the person that we empathize with way more than Xander, because he's the one who is in the right most of the time, just makes me love Giles even more. So where are we at now? Angel has a new plan. He wants to suck the world into a hell dimension, which is, I think, the first we've ever heard of that existing in this world of Buffy. Oh, I guess the Hellmouth kind of counts as to that as well. What did you guys? I just want to hear really brief. Oh my gosh, I just want to hear really briefly from the newbies. If you guys think this made sense for the story at this point, if you like, what did you think about this?
That's so last weird. Minute plot twist. I was so confused, and I loved that Spike was like, I don't get why he wants everyone to be basically on, like, a level playing field. Like, why would he take everyone down to, like, yes, I guess he has, like, endless torment in some regard, but also it's like, okay, but there's no, like, fun cat and mouse game anymore. It's just like, wouldn't you get bored after that after a while? Mm-hmm. Like, and I just really appreciated Spike in the latter half of this episode. I was like, somebody is making sense. Like, I love Angelus, but he was just like, he lost his mind for a hot second.
I found it really interesting that Spike was like, I don't even know. He kind of like wants the good times back with Drew, but he still wants to, like, I guess, do bad things. Because when it was just him and Drew, they were like, cool, let's get this old demon guy that can suck people's souls out by looking at them and destroy the world. So it's like Spike's on his high horse where he's like, I don't really want to, like, destroy the world, smoke cigarette, but, you know, it's kind of fun. But Angel takes it too far because he actually does it. I want to be unproductive. I want to be, like, floppy about it.
Well, I think really, honestly, I think this plot was mainly, it's funny because Buffy sort of uses these tropes and then it pokes fun at them in the same breath, because they're like, all villains clearly want to destroy the world because that's like the ultimate act of evil, and then they're actually taking it down and going like, yeah, but have you really thought this through? You know, I appreciate them doing this for that reason. And I appreciate
had a really
them.
Strange image when Spike says later on, actually we're jumping ahead, I guess, when Spike says that people, I don't know if this is someone's favorite quote, are happy meals on legs. I was thinking of that really strange anamorphic cardboard box that McDonald's uses in its advertisements right now.
Oh, no, I hate that thing.
It's already crazy as is, and I think it already has legs, so I didn't have to imagine too much.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Horror stories about that McDonald's box, but also Spike. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it's, he is like, oh, yeah, idly cause some mischief. That gives me a bit of vindictive pleasure. Like, he gets the same thrill out of causing havoc as, like, you know, going to Disneyland or whatever. And that's, you know, that's his whole deal. But, like, you know, he's kind of like, Angel, really? Like, why? Like, what the hell? So, yeah, I think that's normal. Like, well, quote, unquote, normal.
Yeah, it's commitment to both who Spike and Angel are at the core of themselves, and I like that. So Buffy, I mean, we have this whole thing as well with Kendra comes back, you know, with the sword, helpfully, and gives Buffy Mr. Pointy. And, you know, Buffy sort of ironically falls into exactly the same trap she fell into in the season 2 premiere, nicely, you know, wrapping the season up in a Buffy doesn't think things through package, and goes after Angel and leaving the rest of them at the library. Then, of course, the vampires come in and they almost kill Willow. They break Xander's arm. They take Giles. Cordy escapes, and Kendra is killed by Drusilla, as we said. And you know, Ariana, you know, says like, duh. This is, you know, women of color are props in the white narrative, obviously. Just ask Abby Mills, is her comment. And I, you know, she's right. You know, Hollywood is racist. This is 20 years ago, and it's still going on today. And, you know, Ariana just referenced Sleepy Hollow, which did the exact same thing a week ago. And I think, you know, And as well, on Arrow, we just saw a female lead was killed off to further the lead male character's story. And I think, you know, I think honestly, it's a really good thing that we're paying attention to these things, because, like, we need female leads, we need people of color leads, person of color leads, I can't speak today. We need non-minorities to further the stories of minority characters, because this is a thing that just has been happening in Hollywood for ages. And, like, from my perspective, I remember when Kendra died and I watched it for the first time, I was so upset, because I remember thinking, like, why does the only, like, non-American or non-native speaker, like, why does she have to die? I just felt like, yay, you know, an outsider, someone who doesn't, because, you know, when you're not from America, you're watching American TV, you're always like, okay, well, this is great, but I'm watching someone else's story as well, you know. So, and I think at this point, you know, on the show, the only non-white representation they have is really Charisma Carpenter, who's mixed race. So it's a very annoying thing that happens on the show, and I don't think we need to disregard that. But, you know, I do think at the same time, speaking about the narrative, Kendra was the biggest character they could kill off who wasn't a main. Like, if you look at Buffy so far, the only main character they've actually killed off is Angel. And she wasn't a main character.
Yes, she was, in my heart.
No, she wasn't. Totally main character. No, 100%. She was not. So, like, but that's just what I was saying, is Kendra was big enough for the season finale to really send Buffy over the edge and give the situation some real gravitas. Like, I think for the story, there had to be a death there, and killing the other Slayer sort of symbolically kills off Buffy's Slayer, like the status of a vampire Slayer. It all leads to that final moment when they're like, you take all that away and what's left. Does that mean that I wish Kendra had survived? Obviously, yes. Or that they'd added some more POC representation? Obviously, yes. But I mean, look, at the same time, the show is 20 years old and these problems are still going on today. And I will just say that I think Buffy had some other social agendas that it did handle really well, and it did lead to progression in a lot of areas. But Ariana is absolutely right, is basically what I'm trying to say with that very long rant of mine. I'm sorry. I do this all the time. I'm so sorry.
I agree. It's sad to see Kendra go, too, because mm-hmm. I would have been happy to see a Kendra show, give or take the questionable accent. I don't know. I really don't mm-hmm. know what specific place in, like, you know, latitude, longitude, she was meant to be exactly. I know Jamaica, but, like, where exactly? Maybe that's a realistic accent, but it's pretty hard to get over. It's very hard to swallow. Buffy does mimic her accent again in this episode, too, which is, once again, problematic because it shows that it's funny when people that talk differently.
Oh, my God, people have done that to me so much over my life.
Really?
It's the worst. Yeah, I mean, why do you think I speak like this? Like, I used to have a very different accent, and people, like, I went to international school when I was 15 and I could not open my mouth without people mimicking me, so I had to change
really?
My accent. So yeah. It's hard. I mean, you know, just look at like Russian people on American TV, like it's the worst, the accent mimicking. Anyway, what are you saying? Sorry.
People do. I mean they've done it to me a little in America, especially, like, start talking. No, I don't think it's as bad-natured as some of what is done elsewhere. But, like, yeah, for some reason people do that. For some reason, you know, say something and they kind of reply, like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, as soon as they hear you talk, like, oh, it's hilarious that you are from someone else. And I cannot uh-huh. say that I've been a victim of it in a way that it was really, you know, malicious. I really don't love how Buffy handled it, but why do people do that in general? Like, why? I don't understand.
Low IQ is usually my excuse.
What is so funny about, like, having an accent? I don't really get,
like, those are the same kind of people that, this may offend some listeners, I don't know. I was going to say that find Larry the Cable Guy funny. Like, that's the kind of low
brow. I don't know what that is.
I have no idea.
He plays what I guess is like a redneck hick. That's how he would even pronounce himself, I suppose. And I think he's meant to be like really intelligent, but he plays off of people liking him. I'm not sure what his real end game is. The point is that, like I was saying, I feel like the people that would make fun of people's accents are usually not the most intelligent. They could find something else a little bit more well thought out, to not make fun of it, to laugh at, but to the point of making fun of people and bullying them in a bit. It comes off as some kind of insecurity or lower intelligence to me. And that's sad that I'm saying that, because Buffy's doing it in this episode, but I don't know what more to say.
But Buffy is insecure compared to Kendra. That's what we were saying last week. Like, Buffy literally, like, she didn't like Kendra. She didn't like that there was another Slayer. She didn't like that Kendra was better than her and more disciplined than her and all those things. So I think it does play into who Buffy is, but that doesn't mean it's very fun to watch it happen. But yeah, no, but you know, Kendra's dead and we're all bummed. She used to be my favorite. Like, I had like a poster on my wall and I was like, she's my Slayer. And I'm like, still upset about it so many years later. So yeah, and it's still happening today. So well done, Buffy, for doing what everyone else does. But she's dead now and it's very sad. And someone who's not dead, who I guess you guys wish were dead, is Principal Snyder, who I still think is hilarious, but who's the worst?
I don't get him. Okay, in this episode, it's very clear that he's, like, shocked by Buffy's actual strength. Like, you know, he knows about something going on, and he knows to cover up these supernatural acts, but he doesn't know Buffy's the Slayer, yet he goes out for all the time. Like, he seems so shocked when he discovers his friends and, he seems so shocked when he discovers, like, her strength and, like, you know, all of that. Why does he have it in for her if he doesn't know that she's, like, involved in the supernatural?
I guess this kind of, you know, it goes to Ariana's point in the dark when she goes, like, she doesn't get what his end game is. Like, does he even have one? And I think the only clue we get to that is, like, he's, like, calls up after he kicks Buffy out of school. He's like, tell the mayor I have good news. And, like, you have no idea what that means, but you have to assume that that has something to do with any potential endgame he may have, you know?
But just, like, I feel like expelling her is, like, so lame. Like, that's, like, what he's so obsessed with in this show is, like, I'm going to expel you. I just can't wait for the day to expel you. And I'm like, do you think expelling someone is really going to keep them off of school property? You can't even keep vampires off of school property. Like, what is expelling Buffy going to do?
yeah, the only, like, there's only one sensible reason why he would want to keep her away from the school. And that's obviously what is underneath the school, but I don't know if he knows about that or if that has anything to do with what he's trying to do. But yeah, so Snyder still alive, and Buffy is like, the police come and they try to arrest her. Like, at this point, she's at the lowest of the low. She's been expelled from the school. She's on the run from the law because obviously they're seeing her in close proximity to these bodies and these people that are upset. And let's see, where are we in the timeline? Did she go to the hospital before she meets Spike? Yeah, all right. Just checking, because, yeah, then she goes to the hospital, and we have that scene where we see Willow in the hospital room, and it's very sad. I don't know if you guys were worried about her. I was worried about her.
I wasn't, mainly because, like, you know that she's going to be fine, because she sticks around for quite some time.
Well, how do you know that?
Because you can't live in a world, like, they wouldn't make Allison Hannigan's character such a big deal, like, at post Buffy, if she died in the end of season 2.
Very true.
It's pretty hard, just, I think, culturally, once again, to not even know that Allison Hannigan sticks around. I think, just in general, like, I just know her from Buffy, and I think I would have by now known her for more. But that's also what kind of bit me in the ass, because I thought I knew David for Angel, but then, or for Buffy, but apparently I knew him from Angel culturally more of, because two seasons of Buffy, that doesn't compare to, like, the whole 7 that I'm assuming, well, that I know Buffy has herself, the character. Mm-hmm. Or Giles, maybe. Maybe? Oh, God, now I have to question everything.
I can't question it too much.
We're not pretend that Giles is immortal. That's it. Like, he's untouchable.
Ugh, he's such a badass in this episode.
Oh my God, he is. Yes.
Did you like him and his assessing of Angel when he was tortured? How was that for you?
It was a lot to handle because I love Giles so much and I love Angelus so much, and it was just, there was a lot going on in my head.
That was such a good scene, though.
Like, yeah, I was like, I love this. I hate this. I love this. I hate this.
It's kind of like the ship that you want to ship, but you can't because
you're supposed to. No, 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 not at all.
Too far.
Oh, get your head out of the gutter.
Where would that even be? Gangel? No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I forgot. I wasn't allowed to be shipped.
Gangel works.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Speaking of shipping.
Yeah, let's go back to the
hospital. Let's talk about the least favorite ship of all time that I secretly kind of like. So at the hospital, Willow is in a coma, and they're saying that she might not wake up. And Xander has the most wonderful, amazing girlfriend in the world, Cordelia, who has evolved to be the most kind-hearted, amazing person. And obviously, it is at this moment that Xander sits down by Willow's side and looks at her almost dying and reminisces about all the wonderful times they've had and says, "I love you."
Do you think he meant it like that?
No.
I don't know. No. What do you think?
No, he was 100%. He was 100%. I love you. You're like my life partner, my best friend. You're not my love interest. I don't see him falling in love with Willow. I think he's forever and always going to be pining after Buffy, period.
I feel like it's confusing because, you know, there's the fact that, like, oh, Oz totally forgot, didn't even think to call Willow's boyfriend, you know, about her getting hurt. And then the fact that, you know, when she wakes up and it's like, she's all, Oz, where's Oz? And Xander's kind of like, he takes it pretty well, but he's like, not that stoked. So,
well, that's
I don't know.
Why I think, mm-hmm. Well, that's why I always think that it's a romantic thing. Like, that's my reason for assuming that is because he says, "I love you." And she says, "Oz." And he's like, "Oh shit." You know, you can see it on his face. He's like,
yeah.
But I also think you could also understand that it's like, no, you meant that romantically, Willow. I did not.
Right. Yeah,
I think Xander definitely meant it in, like, I'm losing my best friend type of way. And when Willow, the reason I think behind him not calling Oz or thinking about Oz is it's still so new. Like, it's just, he's not in the picture. He's not hanging out with them constantly. Like, yeah, they get lunch together, but it's not like they're all, like, he's not really part of their inner circle quite yet. Like, he's on the edge still. Like, he's gonna get there. But I think Willow, just hearing that the I love you was more like, oh, this is where my head is at because I'm, like, unconscious. And if I hear those words, that's who I want to hear them from most at this moment. And I don't think, like, Xander looks hurt, but I think it's because he wanted her to, yes, be thinking of him, but not in a, like, I'm still obsessed with you type of way, just, like, a fact that, like, I want my friend in this moment, not the guy I've been seeing for 3 weeks.
You know, and also, what? They would have had him, like, slowly crawl in and, like, you know, creepishly, like, whisper it into her ear and then want to kiss her comatose body or something crazy. But, like, this was not creepy. It was it at all, which is funny coming out of my mouth speaking about Xander. It wasn't creepy, and he was being genuinely sweet about this. And it's funny, too, that, like, you're right, but Britt, that Oz is not—he's not come to full fruition yet. It's strange because he's only been here for Bewitched and this to react. Like he had the cafeteria scene in between those, and it's his reaction to Willow, what's going on with her. I don't see how if they continue to like ignore the fact that he's a werewolf now, like never bring it up again. It's not a thing. Like months have passed from that, I'm sure. I don't know what more they're going to do with him as a character unless they just, like, give him a whole other plot. Because right now he's just Willow's side love interest, cool, they're good, there's no drama there. And I want there to be something.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think, actually, you know, I think thinking about it, you guys are probably right. I think I've been sort of known to turn my shipping goggles on at unfortunate times, and it's a very embarrassing little side thing that I have with Buffy. So, I think you're probably right. I mean, I definitely think that Xander's love for Willow is probably very platonic. I'm just glad that he loves her at all because I really enjoy that friendship. And I'm also very, very into Willow and Oz as a couple. So I'm glad that they have no drama at the moment. But I agree, they do need to think of something to do with Oz. But, you know, who knows? Maybe he's back for season three, maybe he's not. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. So Buffy leaves the hospital. I feel like we're having some things out of narrative. I can't speak English today. I'm sorry. I've like forgotten to speak English in protest. And the Whistler shows up again. You know, we saw him at the beginning narrating, and you were kind of like, who the hell is this guy? And he shows up out of nowhere in Giles's apartment when Buffy goes to visit him, because obviously they figured out that Giles is gone. And we have sort of a question in the dog asking, like, why is he here now? Why suddenly show up for no reason? But I think, you know, he sort of makes that clear in the narrative that he was there to see Angel's big day, and he sort of assumed that Angel would be saving the world, and he was sort of very upset to find out that actually he's here to destroy it. Mm. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I really liked it. I'm like, clearly he hasn't got too many postcards from him lately or anything, but I don't know, I'm like, it's nice that Angel has a friend. Like, yeah. You know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. So that's good, right? Angel has a friend, yay. But, I don't know, I found that quite cute. But, yeah, thing about the guy, the Whistler, you know how when he first meets Angel, he's kind of like, yeah, it's my curse, like not being understood. Do you think that that's literal? Like, as in he says stuff and people don't process it very well? Because he has the same thing with Buffy. She doesn't really listen to him. And I didn't know whether that was meant to be like a metaphor, like just something in casual conversation, like nobody gets me, man. Or if it's a literal supernatural thing that, you know, people don't process what he's saying well unless they know to or something like that. I know that's really weird, but did you ever think about that?
I know what you're saying, Nat, but I didn't catch that line and take it that way.
Whistler, when he meets Angel, like, you know, so, you know, Angel's like, I've got no idea what you're talking about. And he's like, Whistler says, yep, that's my curse, not being understood or something like that. And because of the way that Buffy misinterprets him and doesn't listen to him and it like leaves before finding out what you have to do, I'm wondering if it was meant to be literal or not. Like, you know, like that's literally, you know, his random demon power is that he has this basic a lack of people being able to comprehend him. I don't know. It's so random, but I just wondered whether it was real or not. But I really love like everything about him and the way that Buffy's kind of like, what are you, just some random demon sent from, you know, hell dimension to balance the forces of good and evil on the earth? And he's like, good guess. Like, as if that just happens. There are certain people out there that are demons just for the sake of, you know, souls versus not souls in the world or whatever like that.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of the first sort of, and it is, again, it comes back to my quote, which I guess I'll just say here and skip it later, was that when she asks him what he is, and he's like, I'm a demon, I'm not a bad guy, not all demons are dedicated to the destruction of all life. And I just think this is, again, expanding the lore of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and introducing a world where demon doesn't equal evil, you know? This is really the first little snippet of that we get. And I think it was very, very nicely done, you know? Because we don't even think about it.
Spike's not evil anymore because he totally...
He's evil. But that's the thing. Spike is still evil. He's not like a good guy.
I feel that he's turning. I really do because like he has all this interaction coming up with... if anyone's evil, Joyce. And then he's like very... like kind, or he doesn't have to be to Buffy. Like he should hate her. There should be mortal enemies. I agree with Buffy. She even punches him in the face a couple times, and he takes it like a champ. And I was like, I deserve that. I've been a jerk to you.
I will say for that, and I don't know if this is Vampire Diaries blurring the lines or if it's just the narrative not being clear enough. But there's no turning good when you're a vampire. Like you don't have a soul. Like you are evil. Like that's kind of the thing. And Spike has all of this humanity, like we've talked about. He has all these emotions and reason and good sense and humor, but he's still a soulless vampire. And I think that's sort of at the end when he's like, he's gonna kill her, and then he's like, oh well, and he like runs off because his his part of the deal is done. I think that says a lot about, like, he will cooperate with Buffy as long as it's good for him, but he's not on Buffy's side, you know? But I think that is probably something that needs clearing up, because when you look at something like Twilight or the Vampire Diaries or whatever, like, the lines between when vampires are good and when they're bad are so blurred, like, there's no reason behind it, I think. But there is in Buffy. There's very clear lines drawn. Does that make sense?
A bit, but I still think I'm seeing a bit more humanity in Spike than we've seen other vampires, which mm-hmm. inherently
I think that's
a
right.
bit less evil to me. If he's not good, he's definitely less evil than others.
That, well, no, that makes sense from a point.
He just has more human concerns.
Mm-hmm.
He just has more of a personality. He's just more human. He's not less evil. He's just more human. They're not like...
What Natalie said, basically. Yeah, that's right. It's like humanity, being in touch with emotion and reason and love and obsession and all those things is not the same as being a good, like, wanting good and helping people and all that stuff. But again, I mean, we're only in season two, so it's sort of very early on, and it's very, but yeah, you know, and again, like, things like, you know, getting a soul isn't something that you, like, it matters, you know, he doesn't have one, and he's not a good guy. But like Ariana also points out, you know, he is human. He is human, guys. He has a lot of emotion. He has a lot of sense. He sides with Buffy because at this point he's like, if the world ends, like, no more walking Happy Meals and no more me and Drew being happy together. If I can get rid of Angel, I can get things back the way they were. Who can get rid of Angel for me? Buffy, you know? He's very mm-hmm. Slytherin in that way.
Enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly.
It's classic. But yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know.
I love this, by the way. This whole team up between them is one of my favorite things.
It's so good. It's so good.
But it's
I love
so stupid
him.
Because he's not thinking about Drew's reaction at all. And Spike is more cunning than that. He should have seen through this plan and see it fail because Drew is like... Drew's so in love with Angel, and he's just like, yeah, you and I are going to do this. Like, he hasn't mentioned Drew once, and it's bothering me.
No,
well, he's
Mitch.
Evil.
He's yeah, not, sorry, like, well, he's also delusional about Drew. Like, Spike is nuts about her. He's not rational. Like, he's not cunning about her. Like, He it's not like he thought Drew was going to participate with him and Buffy. He just wants to get Drew and get out. He knows that, okay, when it comes to Spike, Drew, and Angel, it's like a hierarchy. It's like Angel on top, then Drew, then Spike. Like, Spike puts Drew above himself. He's not like, oh, my little Drew. I mean, he is kind of in baby talk and stuff. But, like, he sees her as the dominant party in the relationship, even though she's crazy. And he also knows that she'll go after, like, power, or that she'll just be sad. Like, if Angel gets killed, oh, she'll be so upset, you know. And he knows that Drew loves him in her crazy way, because Drew's completely oblivious to the fact that Spike hates Angel. Like, completely oblivious to it. Or at least acts like she is. So, you know, she doesn't think there's anything wrong between her and Spike. But no, Spike wasn't including, you know, Drew in the plan to help Buffy. He just, that was his sort of thing. It's like, no, you leave me and her alone and I'll get her out of here once you get rid of Angel, basically.
I don't think Drew's crazy enough to not see the fact that Angel treats Spike like human trash. I think she sees it and she kind of finds it
amusing. Yeah, but Drew likes that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, she does. She's like, oh, that's kind of sexy. Like, you guys have this whole, like, human and owner kind of thing, like, or owner and dog kind of thing going on, and I like it because it's like, oh, it's a kink for her or something.
And this is where it's very important to remember that the same rules of morality that we apply to the human characters cannot be applied to the vampires, no matter how funny they are or how nicely they act and stuff. Because again, in this whole Spike, Angel, Drew, OT3, like, you know, Drusilla really enjoys that the two, like, Spike and an Angel are fighting over her and might, like, even kill each other over her. And she just gets a thrill out of that. For Spike's part, he's extremely possessive. And he's like, Drusilla is mine. Like, she is, I am hers. I've given myself to her. So now... she is mine, and he will do anything in his power to take her for himself, because he's an evil vampire who is selfish and who will do whatever it takes, even pair up with a good, like a vampire slayer, his mortal enemy. He's like, screw that, I'll pair up with anyone if it means, you know, getting rid of Angel and getting Drew back. And that's exactly what he does. And it leads to some absolutely amazing scenes between the two of them, because of course Buffy also is not stupid and realizes that she does need all the help she can get getting rid of Angel, even pairing up with the guy who half a season earlier was trying to kill her at the school. And and they obviously meet up with Buffy's mom and
announce the hell away from my daughter.
Yeah. And announce that they're starting a band, which is just the best
thing. Is there fan band for them? Do they have a name? Are there other members that I should know of? Like, is this really a thing?
I wish I could say yes, but no, you know what? I don't think there is. I think, you know, if we ever do like Slayer Rock, then that's what we'll do. The Slayer equivalent of Wizard Rock, we'll get that going. It'll be fun. But for now, it's just an absolutely hilarious little scene between the three of them. And Buffy invites Spike into her home. The questionability of that action is again questionable, but I guess at this point she's just desperate and she doesn't have time to lose. So we also have that absolutely amazing scene of Spike and Joyce sitting in awkward silence and trying to make small talk, and again just showing, you know, Spike doesn't have to kill people just for, like, if there's no reason to kill people, he won't do it. So he doesn't kill her.
So
and
you live in town,
I love it.
She goes.
I have so many thoughts on this.
Natalie, I'm pretty sure you stole my favorite scene when we're getting down to that from this whole bit. And I was like, if anyone was going to steal that quote from me, it was going to be Natalie.
Which one? The Joyce and Spike one?
I won't spoil it, what you chose quite yet. We'll get there. You'll see.
Okay.
How can that not be people's favorite scenes? That's amazing. But yeah, so Buffy's mother, like, getting off the hilarious Spike romp, Buffy's mom find out the whole truth and nothing but the truth about Buffy being a vampire player at last. Was there any relief that she finally knew, or were you just mad? What do you think, yeah. Brittany?
Like, I was so relieved that she finally knew, because it's been driving me crazy forever that she didn't know. And yeah. But now I'm like, you could not have reacted worse. Like, she responded horribly in Ted to the fact that her daughter was, like, she didn't believe her daughter with all of the stuff that Ted was doing. And then now this, I'm like, Joyce, my goodness, when is she going to get killed off? Like, yes, Buffy
Preach.
Has a lot to, like, deal with, but, like, I think being rid of Joyce might help her out a bit.
It's harsh.
I know, it sounds harsh, but also Joyce was...
I don't hate Joyce. I don't think, like, I don't know. I see her side. Like, I don't agree with her side, but I see her side, because from Joyce's perspective, she, over the, like, we saw it even from the flashback, you know, when she was behaving like basically a wild teenager, and they were probably worried she was going to go out and get pregnant at age 15 or however old she was. And they already then they had problems connecting with her. So here's this mom who is alone with a daughter she can't control. She's a bad parent. We know that. She's reading parenting books and desperately trying, how the hell am I going to reach my daughter who feels like a lost cause? Her daughter gets into fights. Her daughter burns down a gym and gets kicked out of school. Her daughter, like, makes trouble in a new town and always disappears, never tells her where she's going, doesn't tell her she has a boyfriend that she slept with. And now this. And I think that it's like she reaches a breaking point. And obviously that moment when they have that fight and Buffy, like, pushes her forcibly. She's like, shut up. I don't need you to, like, I don't need you. I'm going to go save the world. And Joyce is like, if you leave this house, it never comes back. And you can see the look on her face immediately after she says it. She's like, I cross the line. Like, she is devastated by what it has come to. And I feel for her. Like, I really do.
I mean, I would.
Well, also, Joyce was about to keep her from saving the world. It wasn't like...
But Joyce doesn't, like, this is the first thing. Like, she's never heard of this before. When she says, like, just stop being the Slayer, like, she doesn't understand. She doesn't know what's going on. She only has these weird unbelievable things.
Have you tried not being a vampire slayer?
Have you tried not being gay?
Yeah.
It was such a hard-headed metaphor that in that episode too, for like the slaying being gay, like Buffy is like, I was born this way, you know.
I didn't even realize it until I read it from Adriana's doc, and I'm like, wow.
Are you serious, bitch?
No, I mean, you'd be surprised by the obvious things I've missed so far, aka Angel dying in this episode.
No, that's like just basic comprehension skills. Like, you know, like, are you sure? Because you didn't have a strong father figure in your life. Like, Mitch, come on.
I should have gotten it. Like, I smelt it. I think I like kind of like whiffed at it a little bit, and I was like, no, and then just walked away from it.
But yeah, you're so frustrating.
I understand the anger towards Joyce, and I think, you know, we're meant to take Buffy's side in this always, and Joyce is. But I think just like every other character in the show, Joyce is a real person, and there are actually parents like this out there in the real world, you know, a lot of them.
Yeah, and I understand her reactions to an extent, but I'm also like equally frustrated on Buffy's side. Like, you have to tell her. Like, that's been one of my biggest problems, like, through up until this point, is that I'm like, you have to tell her. I'm like, every single person basically at Sunnydale knows, and your mom doesn't, and she's the one who's getting hurt the most. So I think I've kind of internalized the acceptance of, oh, she'll just never know, but when she does know, she has to react in this little nice box that I made for her, and she didn't react in that way, and I just got frustrated. But my initial frustration was on the other side, being like, you have to tell Joyce. And
this would have gotten a lot better if she had told her at a time when the world wasn't ending in 5 minutes.
Exactly. Like, even after the first time Spike showed up, like, he has that, like, great thing that's like, you tried to, like, kill me with an axe. Like, you could have told her after that.
Yeah. I agree. I have to sort of take Joyce's side, because I think it's very easy to sort of forget that from her perspective, this is all very, very, very crazy. And her child needs help, you know? And you don't just see someone explode into dust and go, oh, I guess vampires are real. Hi, bye, save the world for me, you know? Yeah, it's a sad situation. It's a very sad situation, obviously, with considering what happens at the very end. And I think that their relationship is in a bad place, it's fair to say. And I think also we need to talk a little bit more before we get to the end about how Angel kidnaps and tortures Giles, and Drew makes him see Jenny. And that hits me every time in the feels.
Ever
it's
damn
pretty
Tim.
Miserable.
Mm-hmm. And then they make out a lot.
It's gross.
Yeah. Super gross. But it's very, very funny that the two guys are watching like,
honey.
Drusilla.
Why? Why is this happening?
Yeah. Everything about that was great. And gross. And obviously Giles ends up telling Angel how to be worthy. Oh, so we totally skipped over that hilarious moment when he thought he was worthy and he wasn't. And
Someone wasn't worthy. Yeah.
So many good moments for this episode, Jesus. And so Buffy is now like at the very, like in the hospital, Willow's preparing a spell. Buffy's getting ready to fight Angel. She sees Whistler one more time and he asks, you know, she says, I've got nothing left to lose. And he says, you've got one more thing. I just wanted to know what you guys think he's talking about, because I have no idea. Does he mean her life, or does he know what's going to happen to Angel, or does it matter?
I think she's more than just one more thing. She has all of her friends. She has Angel. She has her life. She has her mom. She has her dignity. She has her power as the Slayer. She's a lot to lose, more than just one more thing.
No, at this point, she's gotten kicked out of school. Well, go on. I was just going to say, she's got kicked out of school. She's gotten kicked out of her house. Her friends are in the hospital. Giles is gone. She doesn't really have a lot, except for apparently that one thing.
I think they either mean herself, or they mean Angel is going to come back, and then you'll have to lose him again. So I'm not quite sure which one it's meant to mean. Maybe there's a breakdown of the episode where that's been covered before, but yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know. If we had 5 hours, we could get into it more, but unfortunately we don't. We have to keep moving on. So Spike, you know, at the final fight, we've already kind of discussed Xander and his... I feel like both Joyce and Xander have their breaking point in this episode where they have a choice to do the good thing and they choose wrong. You know, Joyce's was her telling Buffy never to come back. Xander was choosing not to tell her about Angel. Like, they had a chance to take the high road and they didn't. And we'll have to see if that has any consequences moving forward. Xander saves Giles, thank God. And Spike helps Buffy to the extent that he gets Drusilla sedated by choking her in the most stupid thing ever. Because they can't breathe.
Oh my God. It is bothering me so much.
It bothers everyone.
But oh my God. Yeah.
If they don't breathe, yeah. How do they speak? Like,
Well, I guess they do. Smoke? They can breathe. They just don't.
They can breathe. They don't, yeah. Just don't need to, I think. Yeah. Like, it's going... The body apparently keeps going through the physical motions. Like, you know, Angel's blood wouldn't flow out of him if he was dead because he would have no heart. Like, it wouldn't be pumping. Like, but, you know, I don't think they're as dead as you think they are, you know? Like, their body's still actually functioning. So it's just more that they've been possessed by a demon.
And it's probably also, to be honest, like, this is something that fandom in general has a problem with, is that vampires can be knocked unconscious like that. But I think also maybe just simply the thing of stopping the flow of blood to her brain, because the blood is still flowing in her, right? So she still needs blood in her brain. So there you go. I don't know. I guess. Yeah. There you go, Whedon. Saved your ass again. That's what I'm here for. But then Spike is pretty much done helping Buffy. He's gotten Drusilla and he leaves. You know, he's like, oh no, he's going to kill her. And then he's like, yeah, I don't really care. And that pretty much sums up Spike. You know, he does what will help Spike. And as Ariana calls him, a ride or die Slytherin, also for sticking by Drusilla for this long. And I think that's accurate, actually.
I feel like we're going to lose Spike now, though, for a while. And it makes
me sad. Yeah, because they leave town. They're out of there, you know?
Until he finally realizes how horrible Drusilla is and that he can still have a vampire slayer to hunt. And then he's like, oh, maybe I'll come back.
Yeah?
I hope
so. You think that's going to happen? Have you enjoyed seeing Spike this season in the show?
I love Spike. I liked him a lot when Angelus first came around, just because it was like he was being pushed around and I loved their interactions. But I really, really enjoyed his moments in this episode, especially because he's just like, when he goes to like kill the cop and she's like, no. And his reactions are just so funny. I really, really enjoy his just like really dry sense of humor and sarcasm. So I like him when he's not trying to be super, super evil.
I absolutely agree. I think this kind of character, and again, Spike is sort of the benchmark for these types of characters, but you've got it in Once Upon a Time with Hook. You've got it kind of in Vampire Diaries with Damon, though I think he's a different animal, so to speak. Those like bad guys who are just really funny and really wry and really sarcastic, but sort of an antagonist that you can't help but enjoy, even though they're bad guys. Like, I feel like they always sort of do well. And Spike, definitely, I really enjoy what he brought to the show this season. And I'm sad to see him go. Not so much about Drusilla. Not so sad to see her go.
Always sad to see Spike go.
So, yeah, but at the worst possible time, and again, I will say, I said this on Twitter, too, that Xander could in no way have predicted that this exact scenario would play out, but it's kind of his fault anyway. Willow performs the exorcism the opposite of the exorcism. You know, she gets the goodness back into Angel and she kind of takes over.
Insorcism.
Yes, I like
insorcism.
Insorcism. Indecision. really sort of goes beyond, you know, the people like Oz and Cordelia are kind of like, what the hell's happening to her? Like, she kind of takes it over and actually completes the spell. Angel's back, and this was supposed to be a really good moment, and in the doc we just have no. Because, of course, the return of Angel is the return of the, you know, beautiful slash soppy love story of Buffy and Angel. It doesn't last very long, though, so you're in luck, I guess.
You Darth Vader scream.
So I know, Mitch, that you sort of thought that he was going to get his soul back and that was going to be it. Did you have any sort of thoughts about what was going to happen, Brittany?
No, only because I was dreading this moment because I don't want to lose Angelus. So my no was not so much of like a, oh my gosh, Angel's back and now he's dying. It was more of a, oh my God, Angelus is dead. Bring him back.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I knew it had to come to that because I forget who said it last week where they were like, I just want if the spinoff was called Angelus, I'd be much more excited, but it's called Angel. Mm-hmm. So I knew he had to come back at some point. But yeah,
I have hair questions, though. No.
If the spinoff
is called Angel, he has spiky hair, but he doesn't have that hair when he's talking to Whistler. Does Angel, the show, take place within, like, the 2 years before he met Buffy, I guess? Or the 1 year before he met, like, properly introduced himself, I suppose? Because he kind of stalked her.
I mean, I guess no comment to that.
Yeah.
That's strange. Because if they start going back in time and his hair is different, I'm just slightly upset. That's some hair bending that is not okay.
I will say hair bending. I will say to that, I mean, you can never say, like, actors obviously change their hair. And obviously, as well with the vampires, like, they're not supposed to age, but the actors get older. So that is a little bit, like, you can't really control those things. But I guess I'll just say no comment for now. And, you know, we'll find out if we ever actually do the Angel spinoff. Angel is dead, though. Which is very, very, very sad. I am very sad. As I said before, this is technically the show's first main death, however you feel about Jenny. And
yeah, I just think it's rude, Selena, if Jenny was a main part of my life. But,
you reduced her to, like,
a special appearance.
But she wasn't a main character. I didn't write
the
show.
No, I'm not even talking about Jenny. I'm talking about the show in general. Meaning, we already knew this.
But, Buffy
another
died
main character
too,
is going to die, and, like, it's going to be one of the Scoobies. Like, another Scooby will pass.
Well, I think the thing is that Buffy gets a lot of flack for, you know, you've all heard it, like, oh, Joss Whedon kills characters. And I just wanted to point out that this is actually the, not counting Buffy herself, of course, in the season one finale, but this is actually the only death so far of a main character that has occurred on the show. And I just want to point that out. Well, he seems pretty dead. He's, he got, obviously, the thing is, obviously,
sucked
that...
Sucked into his monster friends.
Sucked into hell. Mm-hmm.
I always never feel, like, I have problems with shows that have a supernatural element and death, because I just, I don't really buy it when a supernatural being, like, dies. Mm-hmm, like, Buffy's kind of, like, not that she has, like, supernatural powers, but she has this chosen one element, and Angel is a vampire, demon, vampire, whatever he is at this point. And, you know, like, Jenny was a human being. So I feel like that death I bought, but this death I'm like, this death leaves room for loopholes. So I'm not, like, devastated by it, but I'm also not, like, ruling it out.
But that's also, like, based on what you know about TV now. You know, because TV shows do that a lot now. Like, they use death as a shock value and then they undo it, you know. In Sleepy Hollow's case, just to do it again.
Oh, God. Vampire Diaries, the times. I swear to God that Elena dies in that show.
Right,
it is out of this world. And they're like, oh, don't worry, we'll just resuscitate. Don't worry, we'll turn her into a vampire for, like, the 10th time. Don't worry, we'll just, like, do a magic spell with Bonnie. Don't even... That's where I'm missing on the magic and Buffy, because it feels like such a cop-out in Vampire Diaries that if that starts to become a thing, like, what if Willow, I don't know, like, maybe this is, like, the season 3 intro, like, they're going to try and resurrect Angel from the hell from whence he was sucked into. As long as it's not successful, I'm cool with that plot line. I know they probably want to try it, but I don't want them to actually ever get that. Like, magic, it's the Harry Potter rule. Like, you cannot resurrect someone from the dead. That's just stupid, and I love it that J.K. Rowling is stuck to that, and I don't want Buffy to stoop down to that level ever, 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 ever.
But I think, you know, that's the thing that Brittany was saying, you know, about TV in general and the whole supernatural phenomenon that is actually literally, I'm talking about the show Supernatural, because it brings back its characters all the time.
They pop in and out of a hell...
A lot, all the time. And heaven. and purgatory and what have you. But yeah, no, I do think, I will say for Buffy, like, they already did bring Buffy back from the dead, technically. So it's not sort of above that in that sense, I can say. But yeah, I mean, I will say, you know, Angel is dead. That is kind of what we're left with at the end of season two, and Buffy killed him. And that matters a lot, clearly. That whole moment sort of led up to that, with Buffy being, like, Sarah Michelle's acting, again, I think, is just really good in this scene, because she's so relieved and she's so happy and she's so just, it worked. And then she sees the portal opening behind Angel, and she realizes what she has to do. She doesn't only lose Angel. She doesn't just have to kill Angela. She has to kill Angel, who is innocent of all of this. And this is when we find out why their love theme is called Close Your Eyes, because that's what she tells him. Mm. And then she kills him.
Yeah. I have to wonder how he didn't feel the vortex, like, starting to suck him in, if anything. Because, you know, like, wouldn't, like, the hair in the back of your neck start to tingle a little bit?
He was so out of it at that time.
Yeah, he's just realizing that he's, like, back to having a soul.
He doesn't even know where he is. Like,
which
he doesn't
I
know
do like how they contextualize that in part one of this finale, where they have him gain his soul back with the Romanians and have him say the same lines, really, like, I don't know where I am, what's happening. Mm. So I like that, because it didn't feel as cheap here. I think that was a really good setup. But I also have to ask, at this point, watching Buffy live, I think both Natalie and Selena, you guys both were, did you know that the show Angel itself was coming, or was this like, he's dead, what do we do with our lives?
Well, it wasn't like that. There was no spinoff at this point. That didn't even come into conception until later. So at this point, when season two happened, there was no talk of a spinoff at all.
So that's weird, because why would they kill off the main cast?
Didn't start airing till after season three of Buffy. Like, no comment on when it's set or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it didn't start airing till after season three of Buffy.
Mm-hmm. Because then, I don't know what's going on with this, because often we're asked, you know, like, if you were to start covering Angel, wouldn't you do it after the season two finale? And that's where I feel stupid.
No, season three finale.
I figured it was like, oh, Angel's dead, and then it's going to pick up, I don't know, like, weird things from there. But, okay, I can get behind that. That makes more sense to me. I just want to know, like, was there something going on with, like, David's contract or something about him wanting to do another show?
No, not at all. I think that at this point, like, the reason, really, like, Angelus, we're at the end of season two now, and in season one the main villain was the Master, and in season two it was Angelus, and it was always set up to Buffy falling in love with Angel completely, him turning to the dark side, her having to come to terms with that, and then having to kill him at the end of the season. And it was sort of, speaking of characters being there to serve the lead, that was sort of, he was there to serve her arc through the season. He was there to propel her going forward. And his death was always part of the plan. You know, David Boreanaz, I think he always knew that Angel was dying in this episode. But yeah, so we're left with Angel being dead. Buffy leaves town. And this is actually, this has to say again, speaking of scenes that influence you growing up, this whole sequence of the overalls of sadness and Sarah McLachlan and Buffy staring moodily out the window
are just something else.
Yeah. Ouch. I love them so much. I love this montage of sadness.
Yeah, I know it was supposed to be sad, but I laughed a lot.
No.
I think it's because I would never place that Sarah McLachlan song here, because I've listened to it so much outside of Buffy, just for some reason it didn't fit in my mind, where I was like, I'm supposed to be feeling sad, and I didn't feel sad when it happened, and now I have to watch this, and it's just, I'm gonna laugh because I'm uncomfortable.
Like, I cried. I legitimately cried, and I shouted, no, don't do it, don't do it, turn around, look, here's the portal, don't do it, Buffy. Like, all that when he was, you know, stabbed and whatnot. But then when it came to this, it just felt like a complete tonal shift to, like it was so much more mature right before this, and then it was just, like, so melodramatic, and it was dragging. It was the
You guys are crapping all over song. My childhood. This is the worst. I love this scene so much. Like, it just, when you're watching it, obviously, again, like, I had never heard Full of Grace before, and I always link it to the scene, always, and I felt Buffy's pain, even though, like, for me, it was almost the opposite. like when Angel actually died, I wasn't like super sad because I was never like hugely into the Buffy and Angel thing. And like, I don't know. I just never, that particular death like never hit me that hard. But the scene of her having to deal with it afterwards and being so distraught that she left, you know, left Sunnydale behind all by herself, that really gets to me. And now she's done. She's gone. She's left. Any predictions about where season 3 is going to pick up? Did this spoil you, Brittany?
The Netflix description for the first episode of season 3 is not great. So I'll keep my mouth shut.
Don't read them. Just don't look at them. I never look at them for Gilmore Girls.
Close
it's possible.
Your eyes and absently click until you get it. The episode starts playing.
Yes. Like Buffy said, close your eyes.
I don't know. I know 0% of what's coming up in season 3. I do not know the intro. I know it's meant to be a lot better as we're going along. Like the seasons will continuously improve, and that going into season
That's
3,
debated
like
debated by people.
It's very debated.
Very debated. Some people consider about where it peaks and where the lows are, but I like the end.
Some people consider this
season.
One. Yeah, I do too. I mean, some people consider this becoming parts 1 and 2 the best episode Buffy ever did. Some people consider it like in there. I think it's probably in my top 5. I don't know. It really depends on what I'm judging it by.
I really love
But I think there's a lot of stuff later.
I really love the final 3 seasons. I really love 5, 6, and 7 like a lot.
And you
so
will have fans debating. You will have fans debating whether it's the first part of Buffy or the second part of Buffy that's the best. And we have very hard like opinions on both sides. I think me and Natalie both prefer the later ones.
Everyone either likes 1 to 3 or 5 to 7. In one of those camps.
Yeah, I actually really like 4.
Oh, Selena, no, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You notice I chose my words very carefully. Yeah, 1 to 3 or 5 to 7. And I'm very much a 5 to 7 person, but
I'm a 4 to 7 person. I have a soft spot for season 4. We'll get to that when we get to it.
Middle, it's the bridging ground.
I like the bridging ground. Anyway, the favorite scenes of part 1. I will just really briefly say that mine were the flashbacks because I am a sucker for flashbacks and origin stories. So everything about that, I loved it. Brittany, what was yours?
Mine was meeting Whistler because I hate Rune so much that when he came in, I was like, Rune, you're playing someone that's not like Rune. So,
yeah. And Natalie, that's part of yours too, right?
Well, yeah, you guys both said like, you know, stuff about the flashbacks and Whistler. I really loved Angel meeting Whistler and Whistler being like, get your life together. But I also really loved the girls, like Willow and Buffy and also Giles' tiny moment when Xander was in the library. Yeah. Like, kill him good. Mm-hmm. And they're both just like, they look at him. And even Giles, because he was like, Jenny wanted to help Angel, like, let's help Angel. Even though Angel killed her, like, Giles was still on board. And just Xander's vicious reaction and then the girls just both being like, like, the looks on their faces of, like, disgust. As I said, his whole, I don't know if I could hang out with him anymore after this, but,
I like that, too. And Mitch, what was yours?
Mine was the scene where Angel's talking to Drew in the confession booth, because I found it to be really unique to see Drew, as Brittany was saying, in this normal state. And this is also, I guess it should be noted, right after her entire family had been murdered, I guess, because it seems like she was in a habit, meaning she was a nun by now, and she had just become a nun when he turned her. So I think that we're seeing that on purpose to show like the one last bit of sanity she had left before Angel took that from her forever and turned her into his insane little lovebird for the rest of his life and their life.
Natalie, what is our favorite quote?
Well, the best quote in the episode is obviously Spike when, you know, he's when Angel is presenting his box of Acathla to the gang, and Spike's just sitting there going, it's a big rock, can't wait to tell my friends they don't have a rock this big, which is just so funny and so iconic. It's one of the top, like, I've been waiting to get to that episode so that I can use that quote. There's been about five quotes in all of Buffy that I'm like, got to be on that episode, got to get that quote. This isn't my number one, but it was a great one to be able to nab. It's so funny.
It's one Selena of the funniest things ever.
Mm-hmm. It's just the delivery. It's just so ridiculous. And there's a few lines, a few other lines of his that were like also hilarious, like someone wasn't worthy and many others, but just they don't have a rock this big is so good. But you had another one that I really liked, which is you mentioned earlier, which is talking about the personhood of demons.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to mention it again. It's just when Whistler says that he's a demon, technically. He says, I mean, I'm not a bad guy. Not all demons are dedicated to the destruction of all life. I like what that opens up, the possibilities of that. Brittany, what's your line?
Mine was just another sarcastic comment from Spike, who's had it in this episode, where he's just like, they're talking about the plan, and he's like, do you understand what this means? And Spike's like, the demon wakes up, wackiness ensues.
Yes. Such a good character. This was written by, written and directed by Joss Whedon, by the way, so I know the relationship with him is contentious now, but he does write some brilliant one-liners.
Oh, you can tell. And the phrasing of a lot of what he has, like even Willow, like the phrasing of what Oz says about Willow, just the kind of backward, the way he puts a sentence together backwards, like in that kind of dialogue that he, like, quote-unquote, invented, was very present in this episode. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
And finally, Mitch's quote.
Mine's with that excavator guy who says, you don't want to be surprised. And Giles just goes, as a rule, no. At this point, he's like, I'm done with all that surprise shit.
Yeah,
not okay.
Yes. And in our part two, just moving on quickly, my favorite scene of part two, pretty much everything with Buffy and Spike teaming up. I'm just completely cheating, taking everyone. But the scene with them starting a band. Which I like to believe is true. I love it. I love all of it so much. And Natalie and Brittany, you guys have the same one.
Joyce and Spike chilling in the living room in silence and her being like, have we met? And he's like, yeah, I hit you with an axe. You know, you hit me with an axe one time. get away from my daughter. That whole scene was amazing. All the Spike and Buffy, especially their first one. But that Spike and Joyce was just so good that I died.
Yeah. And Mitch?
Mine's when Ginny comes back, if only in an illusion, because it was nice to see her face again. I really missed it.
Yes, I agree. Brittany, what was your favorite line of part two?
Mine was from Giles and Xander, where Giles is like, it's a trick. They get inside my head, make me see things I want. And Xander's like, well, then why would they make you see me?
At least he has perspective. Yes, it's accurate. And Natalie?
Mine was from that first scene between Spike and Buffy where they decided to team up. Just the look on Spike's face when he just says, I want to save the world. But more so that little bit of interaction of like, I hate you and I'm all you've got. And he's like, all right, talk. And then he's just like, okay, just let me kill this guy. Like Spike is just so himself. And I just love it. But that also that I'm all you've got, like, you know, enemy of my enemy is my friend. That whole theme. I really loved it. So
I loved it.
Highlight of this episode was definitely the Spike being on the side of the angels for a very short amount of time, as opposed to the Buffy and Angel romance issues, which I like, but the Spike was the MVP.
And Mitch goes going along that trend.
Yeah, it's just simply Spike's, well, I sing, because
the delivery again is on point.
The delivery, yeah. Because he was so on board with getting like Buffy on the right track there. Like it was just, yeah. I mean, part of me is almost starting to ship it in a weird way, but I don't know if I should feel that way because it feels kind of panic in this scene. It's like, why? Like, I should hate him, shouldn't I? I don't know. Like, they have this weird kind of spark here. It's interesting.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do definitely like James Masters. I think he is a gift, and I think they use him really, really well, and I enjoyed it. But my line is actually Buffy. I had to go last because this is one of my favorite lines of the whole series. And I know in retrospect, it's a little bit cheesy, but it wasn't for me when I watched it the first time. So there, when she's cornered by Angelus in the courtyard and he goes, no weapons, no friends, no hope. Take all that away and what's left. And she goes, me. And I cheer and I'm like, yeah, girl power, Slayer stuff. I love her and I love everything. And everything else is irrelevant because I love this show so much. And that's mine. Running through the listener feedback, we're just going to...
So our first listener feedback is from Brittany Koza at Brit L. Koza. And she says, rewatching a Buffy along with Rewatchable. Can't wait for the newbies to see the season 2 finale. # close your eyes. # full of grace. We made it. We did it, guys. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Andrea B., who is timey-wimey Daffy on Twitter, said, Becoming might still be my favorite finale, and it has a few of my fave Spike quotes. One has to do with rocks. Winky face. Looking forward to PC.
Podcast.
What's PC? Oh, podcast. Yeah, well, obviously, I took the rocks quote. I also replied to that person being like, rocks quote is life, because it is, so, yeah.
It rocks.
Gordon wrote at Tuna Choppy Man, season 3 next week. Other seasons have better episodes, but in my opinion, season 3 is one of the few consistently great seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Most of the other seasons are at least 25% meh. Season 3, just apologies in advance for the pun, slays it!
Yes.
Aww.
Brittany?
Then we have Naomi Coop Kennedy at Nay Cooperman, who tagged both Rewatchable and Onceable and said, yeah, totally missed the Buffy Once finale overlap, but now that I see it, I can't miss it. Very cool. I agree.
Steelers. Totally. Yep. Natalie?
And then there was a little bit of a throwback to Atla from Stephanie, who was watching the end of Avatar The Last Airbender, tweeting us saying, okay, Aang got so hot in season 3. IDK how they did it, but they did. No, he's 12. He's 12. Zuko with the floppy, ridiculous hair, yes, hot. Aang is still 12, no matter what happens, just because he grows a bit of hair and goes to dancing school. Don't mean shit. But go with God, you know, whatever. Whatever floats your boat. We talked enough about the sexuality of those teenagers, you know, on that show. So, you know, whatever. Whatever you want to do, that's fine. Mitch, do you want to read this finale of Atla one?
Do I ever? Stephanie at Steph Bo Ray wrote, OMG, I just finished Atla series finale, and it's so good. So good, 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 good. Happy faces, smiley faces, crying faces, all those. # the feels, # Aang is the best, # I still ship Zutara. That is a
Hashtag Zutara, forever.
Five ever, according to you people. I do not believe Zutara five ever, but if you want to join in on Rewatchable's # fun, # Zutara five ever, unfortunately. anyway.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. We're done with season 2 now, which means 2 down, 5 to go. If you want to weigh in and give your opinions about this finale or about what's coming up, spoiler-free, please, you can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet @re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will cradle you against her bosom as you drive away from the upcoming apocalypse. Wonderful. I'm rating right now. That's great. Thank you so much. Some of us will talk to you next week. For some, it's 2 weeks away. My name is Selena.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, bye everyone.
Bye. Bye. We'll be right back.